He never wrote an addendum and said, well, until, and then it starts to decline. It's not in there. Doesn't matter how much translating you do, it's not in there. Oh, let's see. That row is just ridiculous. So I'm going to have to give it to you girls out there. Are you three buddies? Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, they're buddies. Yeah, they're going to share it everywhere. Okay, let's see. Oh. The weapon of giving thanks. You know, all right, put them down. Unless I'm getting a witness right now. Nation tonight. I mentioned that we're going to get into that. That's where we're going to go for a little bit. So, the imagination. Now, it's interesting. We showed a screen tonight because that's good for our illustration here. A lot of us have this concept that we say, oh, that was just my imagination. Heard people say this at times, right? Ah, it was just my imagination. You know, we never seem to do that when the devil's talking to us. You see an opportunity to steal some really good stack of cash somewhere, you're not going, it's just my imagination. That temptation that the enemy's putting there is not just your imagination. When that lustful thought or that angry thought creeps in, you don't just go, psh, it's just my imagination. When the enemy speaks to your imagination, we acknowledge it and we go into warfare mode and we're like, no, I do not. I'm going to stand against. I'm going to resist. You know, best case scenario, that's what you do. But I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. So that is something we understand on the negative side. But on the positive side, God is speaking to our imagination. And more often than not, we end up brushing off what he's saying. It's just my imagination. We really got to take another look at this because it's a legitimate way that God is talking to us. We have to learn the value of it and grab a hold of it. And I talked a lot about spirit, soul, and body and the spirit realm and the soul realm and the heavens. And I've covered a lot of things. The imagination, to simply put it this way, is an organ of your spirit. A lot of people would put it as a product of your mind. It's not. It's an organ of your spirit. Because when the enemy comes, he's planting it in your imagination, in your spirit. He's a spiritual being. That's where he's putting it. When the Holy Spirit comes and plants an idea in your imagination, he's a spiritual being. That's where he's putting it. It's not your soul. It's in your spirit. It's an organ of your spirit. Now, we had imagination in the Garden of Eden. We got to think about this because we get this question in our mind, is the imagination good? Is the imagination bad? You can always go back and look at the Garden of Eden and say, is it there before the fall? If something existed before the fall, that's good. If it exists after the fall, probably bad. That's where you get this division line. Take, for example, sickness. There's no sickness in the Garden of Eden. We also know in Revelation that it says there will be no sickness in heaven. Jesus, think about it this way. Okay, so Garden of Eden and before, there's no sickness. Revelation, new heaven, new earth, in the future, no sickness. We're living in a time zone right now where there is sickness. Living between two timeless eternities where there isn't. And in this one, Jesus says that it should be on earth as it is in heaven. He's saying, okay, you're boxed into this timeline. Why don't you reach over into Revelation 22, grab a hold of that, and pull it into here? Because you're in here, grab this and drop it in. Take what's in heaven on earth. That's what you're supposed to pray. When you pray, say, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, right? Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it's done in heaven. Grab that, pull it in. You're stuck in this timeline, grab it, pull it in. Well, looking at the imagination, we know that there's an imagination in the Garden of Eden because, first off, God is a creator. It's the first thing he's doing. Create, right? So he's a creator. He creates Adam and Eve in his image. If you're creating something like yourself, he's creating them as creators, as creative beings. You follow me so far? They're created like him. He's a creator. We're created beings. We are creative beings. Creative means we have an imagination. Another example is he takes Adam and he says, I want you to name all of this stuff that I just made. He immediately gives him a job that's creator-based. It's imagination-based. It's creativity galore. Come in and name all the stuff. Adam's like, I just got here. Well, use your imagination. Essentially, that's what he said. Use your imagination, Adam. That's what he released him into. Began to create out of your imagination. Now, which I think actually must have been hilarious to watch. Do you imagine day one, everything is brand new, like you just showed up and you're looking at elephants and giraffes. You're like, long neck horse, yellow. No, do better, do better. Tall drum thing, gray trunk. Like, no, no, give it a good name. Make it sound French. Giraffe. I don't know what French is, but a giraffe. You know, there's no idea to know how this went down. It sounds pretty hilarious when you start to think about it. Like, this must have been like God saying, I don't have TV, let's do this. I'm going to create man. Ultimate reality show, right? Okay, I could create man. Ugh. Now, name everything. Awesome. So, we got an imagination. We have a creative God. He's happy, he's enjoying, he's loving, as always. And he creates something just like him. And he puts it here, and he says, use your imagination. Be creative. Come up with names. Now, this is all good. This is all working just great. Until you have the fall. The imagination didn't immediately become completely corrupt and unusable. The imagination operates like the projector screen. The projector screen is neither good nor evil. The issue is what is projected on it. You know, there's whole groups of people, whether they be Amish or some Mennonites or, you know, some of the real conservative people who will take TVs and they'll never have them in their house. Or they'll get rid of, you know, someone will get real legalistic one day and they'll throw the TV out of the house. That concept comes from the same idea. Because when you look at it, the TV is just plastic and glass and metal. There's nothing evil about it. It's an inanimate object. It doesn't have an evil nature in any way. The reality is what you choose to project on it. You know, some people are going to watch this DVD later. Thank you. The reality is, you're projecting something good on your television screen. Edifying, building you up. Excellent. But others may project some things on there that are going to defile their spirit. It's really all a choice of what you're projecting on it. The imagination is literally an organ of your spirit that is just like that screen. It is neither good nor evil. There are two different people that want to project on it, God and the devil. They both want to use that screen. And when Satan runs a film on there, you're like, oh, I know who that is. And when God does, we're like, I ate some pizza last night and went to bed. You know, it's something or other. It's something else. And we're discounting when God runs the film on our imagination screen. You know, everything that now is once only existed in the realm of the imagination. It's a big statement. Let me unpack it for you. All right, take for example, this Apple computer. At one point, not too long ago, this did not exist in the physical world. People who we call inventors had to go across into the imagination realm, grab a hold of it, and bring it back. You know, at some point in the past, these chairs that you're sitting on only existed in the imagination realm. Someone had to envision it. They had to see it. They had to step from the physical, mental, soul world into the realm of the spirit, the imagination realm, grab a hold of this chair idea, and bring it back with them to our realm. That's how inventing happens. You go over, you grab a hold of something, you pull it back. We do this all the time in our minds, whether it's, you know, I want to have children. Go grab it, bring it back. I want to have a house. This is what I envision that it would look like. You're going over, you're grabbing, you're pulling something back with you. You're seeing something about yourself in the future. I want this type of job. I want, you know, this type of life. I want to do these things, to go to school, to educate, to move forward. You use your imagination to see what's in that realm and grab a hold of it by faith. You bring it back with you into this realm. We're doing it all the time. Christians, non-Christians, they're able to grab a hold of things in the spirit realm through their imagination and bring it back. Do you follow me so far? The interesting thing about this is that the church, for 1,500 years, really led in the imagination realm. You look back, we've gotten hijacked by the homosexual agenda. If you go back the first 1,500 years of Christianity, and I'd say even a bit further into 1700s, 1800s, we were running and pushing all the creativity. Who had the music? The church. Who had the art? The sculptors, the painters, the church. Everything about creativity, the church was pushing it forward. At a certain point, the church turned back and stepped away. They looked at a young gospel singer named Elvis, and they turned away and rejected him. And the enemy took it from there. You know, instead of the church stepping up and really teaching about the supernatural, the Beatles bring it in from the Eastern mystics. You start going through these, you know, and you find that these musicians were bringing it in from other places because the church was lacking. You know, I found personally, I have in the future the idea of writing a book on the New Age that helps Christians understand not to bridge the gap, but how do we reach them? Part of the issue is that every person that's been a major leader in the New Age movement has a background in the church. Every single one that I could study out, going back 150 years, started in the church and then turned and they went their own way. Part of the issue is they were having things happen, gifts and dreams and supernatural, and the church didn't know what to do other than reject them. So, this whole thing of the imagination, we have kind of left it out there to the New Age movement. We've left it to the world. We've left it to Hollywood to make all the great movies. We've left it to, you know, the fiction writers to write all the bestsellers. We've left all this stuff behind and rejected it because we're going to run and retreat into the church and wait and hope for the blessed hope to come and we can get out of here while everything collapses around us. It's not working. That is not the point of why we're here. He said, occupy until I come, not be preoccupied with my coming. You need to hear that again? It said, occupy till I come, not be preoccupied with my coming. At some point, we lost the moving forward, and we started to pull back. You know, there was a change in theology, and I'm not going to go in depth on this, but there was a change where we started to see everything going downhill. And it happened before World War I. There was a few books that were very influential. And World War I comes and people go, ah, this is what the book told us would happen. They took it as a confirmation. They saw the Great Depression. Ah, the book told us the church was going to decline. It told us things were going to get worse. You know, the reason that the church didn't rise up against Hitler in Germany is because they were believing that an Antichrist would come and rule the world. So they're like, oh, here he is. We should get raptured any moment now. That's a problem. When you start to believe this way, everything negative is just a confirmation. It's a sign of the times, right? This is a sign of the times. That's about as far as I should go with that. Oh boy, what did I just step in? Cool. Well, all right. We'll get back on track. You know, one of the things about the imagination that I started to study this out is I saw that Jesus actually talks about the imagination. We don't notice it, but in Matthew 5, he's given the Sermon on the Mount. He talks about the Beatitudes. He gets into divorce and giving oaths and adultery and murder, and he's talking about all these issues. But you remember very clearly, it talks about if you look at a woman and lust after her in your heart, it's as if you've already committed the act, right? If you have hatred in your heart toward your brother, it's as if you've already become a murderer. Okay, so these are the two analogies. Here's what's going on. In here, in this section, this will be, I sound really loud. In this section will be the imagination realm. Now over here is the physical realm, all right? So follow me. Here's what Jesus is saying. When you go over into the imagination realm, and over here, you fornicate and you kill people. When you come back into the natural realm, you carry with you a legitimate stain of sin that you actually have to repent of. You grab a hold of it and you bring it back. If that realm is not real, I can come over here and I can fornicate and kill all I want. Because it's just my imagination, right? Jesus is saying, look, guys, that is not true. I didn't just put it in the Big Ten not to kill people and not commit adultery because I just wanted you to treat each other okay. I want you to actually walk in love. See, what we miss when we look through legalistic eyes, we look at these laws in the Old Testament and we think, these laws, if I do them, I'll be a good person and I'm going to try. The reality is the laws show us not only that we can't, but it also shows us what love looks like. That's a huge missing piece. Those laws are not just rules. They actually show you what love looks like. Love doesn't kill its neighbor. Love doesn't commit adultery with its neighbor's wife. Love doesn't want his neighbor's stuff and covet it. It doesn't lie to each other. It doesn't steal to each other. Love doesn't do these things. Those are meant to show us what love looks like. But he's going beyond it to go, guys, I didn't mean that you'd walk in love just because you didn't kill him. If you still want to kill him, you still aren't walking in love. You got murder in your heart, guys. You got adultery in your heart. And when you do this, you carry back with you something real that you now have to deal with. Repent of it. Get clean. Get forgiveness. You know, here's the point of the story. That realm is just as real as this realm. He's validating the power of the imagination as a real realm. That you have to deal with it and its consequences. It's legit. It's real. That's what we seem to think of it as, just like, it's just in my head. It's just this. It's just that. No, Jesus said it's something real, that you're going to bring something back with you that is worth and you have to repent of. So, the imagination realm is just as real as the physical realm. It just operates differently. Now, how many of you are big dreamers? You have lots of, I'm talking when you sleep, you have lots of dreams. Awesome, look around. That's super cool. All right, I would like to divide the dreamers into two categories. Those who dream because God designed you that way, and I'll tell you about the other one in just a minute. We'll take an intellectual pause for a moment there. You guys flip to Job with me. You need to see this, especially you dreaming folk. Job is easy to find. You flip to the middle, that's Psalms, then you take a hard left. Job chapter 33 is what you're looking for. I should probably narrow it down a little bit. There's a lot of chapters. Job chapter 33. We're going to look specifically at verses 14 through 16. For God speaks in one way and yet in another, yet man does not perceive it. In a dream, in a vision of the night, when deep sleep falls upon men as they slumber in their beds, he seals instruction in their hearts. Okay, here's what's going on. God speaks in one way, then he speaks in another, and man does not perceive it. So what does God do? He waits till you go to sleep deeply, then he talks to you. Some of you, God made you as dreamers. Some of you, he can only talk to you when you're asleep. I've literally had people, I just dream all the time. And then once they get this teaching and they realize, wait a minute, if I paid attention to God when I was awake, I'm going to have less dreams. It literally works that way, because the problem now is that God's trying to talk to you 16 hours a day, and you're like, psh, it's just my imagination, it's just my imagination, blah, blah, blah. You're invalidating everything God is saying to you until you fall asleep deep enough that he can then seal instruction in your heart. How about we listen the rest of the time? That will help a lot of us. You know, we've been trained, it's called Western rationalistic philosophy. Western rationalistic philosophy says this: if you can't observe it and test it with your five physical senses, then it's not real. That is the Western culture's approach to anything supernatural. If you cannot test it with your five physical senses, then it's not real. It's the realm of faith, not the realm of reason. And they divide things up this way. Part of the issue that happens then is you just have to keep going into quantum physics and quantum mechanics to try to figure out all this stuff that you don't understand as a scientist. Yeah, let's say, for example, how many of you believe that there's a continent called Antarctica? Oh my, we have a lot of doubters. How many of you believe that there's a continent called Antarctica? A little better. How many of you have been to Antarctica? That's what I thought. So you're telling me that you believe, you're taking it by faith that that's actually there. You've never tested it. You've never observed it. But you believe it's there. This is a fascinating way to really approach your average atheist. Because they believe crazy stuff. I mean, stuff that makes us look tame. I mean, they believe crazy stuff. And even the stuff that they believe that can be proven and observed and tested, like, you know, there's a continent named Antarctica. Most scientists have never been there. They're believing some other scientist. And they're like, well, it's a fact. Okay, well, there's certain things I believe are facts. And I know my facts are right. But that's the thing. Now, for the video, I'm not actually saying I don't believe in Antarctica. I do. And we did land on the moon, and there wasn't a shooter on the grassy knoll. And, the reality is, though, that there are so many things that we take on faith. Even the most astute scientific individual, atheist or evolutionary biologists or whatnot, they are taking a majority of their information on faith. Even Western rationalistic philosophy is nonsense to say, well, this is the realm of reason and this is the realm of faith. And they have to search things out. When you think about it this way, in quantum physics, they have looked at objects and they've measured that every 1/10,000th of a nanosecond, every 1/10,000th of a nanosecond, the matter that they observe, the cells, the atoms, they disappear and they reappear. There's something about the atom on that subatomic level that disappears and reappears every 1/10,000th of a nanosecond. Some of you are blinking in and blinking out right now. Some of you more than others. Nudge your neighbor. Husbands, this is a good excuse. I'm more subatomic than some people, you know? I just blink in and out a lot. I was listening, yeah. That's the interesting thing, is this quantum physics, they have proven that there's an invisible spirit realm, and they just call it another dimension because they don't know what to do with it, and we've known it was there the whole time. It's like, come on, science, just keep proving our truths right. Yeah, I remember reading an article where a scientist sat down and they was having lunch. It was a believer, but he was having lunch with Pastor Youngi Cho in South Korea. And he said, Pastor Cho, when I found this discovery, it was just breathtaking that literally the words we speak can affect the health in our body. And he said, you know, I'm sorry, doctor, but we've known that since Proverbs, because it says life and death is in the power of our tongue. So, in our culture, it would be interesting to see how certain things would go down. Say, for example, in 1 Samuel 3, you have Samuel who's sleeping in the tabernacle, and he's hearing the Lord speak to him, Samuel. And he goes to Eli, and he says, you know, Father, did you call me? And he says, no, go back to bed. And he gets up again, hears it a second time. And this time, Eli has a little more discernment. And he says, if you hear it again, say, yes, Lord, your servant is listening. We're familiar with this story. It's 1 Samuel 3, if you'd like to look at it again. But in that story, if that were to happen now, under Western rationalistic philosophy, here's how it might have gone. Samuel goes to Eli. He says, you know, I'm hearing you call me. Eli's like, no, go back to bed. You know, you're just playing around. Go back to bed. He comes the second time. No, I didn't call you. Go back to bed. Stop fooling around. Third time, he gets up and he says, okay, you are being a brat. You're being a punk. We're going to go look at this. He grabs his oil lamp. They walk around inside the tabernacle. Okay, in this corner, I am not calling you. In this corner, I am not calling you. Under this table, there is nobody hiding calling your name. There is nobody, Samuel, in this room, just you and me. Nobody else is here. Go to sleep. That's Western rationalistic philosophy. I don't see it. I don't observe it. It's not here. This has creeped into our Christianity, it's creeped into our society, and it's complete nonsense. The reality is, he had enough understanding to go, there's something else talking to you, Sam. Sorry, buddy. It's not me. Go back to bed and talk to it when it comes again. That's a good parent right there. Now, if we were to transfer that into how do we raise our kids in this kind of thinking, all right, little Johnny comes running in your room late one night and he says, you know, mommy, mommy, daddy, daddy, there's a monster in my closet. All right. Typical Western American. You go in, you flip the light on, you open the closet. You're like, there's no monster in this closet. I am really tired. Go back to bed. I'm going to tuck you in so tight your arms won't move. And this is how our children learn big people don't see what I see. And it must just be my imagination. And you're told that from that age, growing up, it's just your imagination, blah, 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 just your imagination. Let's say if we did this right, though. They come in your room, they tell you the same thing. Okay, let's go take a look. You go in, the two of you sit down on the bed together. Okay, Johnny, describe what's in the closet. Okay, I see an 8-foot monster. It's got great big claws and big fangs, and it's got glowing eyes, and it looks angry, like it wants to hurt us. Wow, Johnny, that sounds really scary. You know how we prayed last week to invite Jesus into your heart? Oh, yeah, that was awesome. Well, Johnny, what you need to understand is that monster in the closet, you have authority over him. So what we're going to do is you're going to pray, and you're going to take that authority you have, and you're going to command it to leave. Okay? Okay. And he prays, and he commands it to leave. Now, Johnny, what just happened? It was hysterical. He ran out of the closet, and he went from looking angry to looking scared, and he jumped through the wall, and he's gone. Now you have just validated the imagination. Now you've raised a child that's not embedded with this Western philosophy. You're teaching them to validate what they're seeing and their authority inside their identity. Well, laid a foundation here, a groundwork with the imagination. I'm going to change direction just a little bit, and then we'll jump into activation. We want to talk now about worship. Now, I want to connect this imagination to worship because we need to integrate these together. You know, it seems like every time there's a move of God, there's a move of worship that changes. John Wesley, his brother Charles Wesley, wrote over 3,500 hymns in the movement of the First Great Awakening. As John Wesley's traveling as a circuit rider, his brother is writing hymns that were, at that time, they were cutting-edge hymns. I know that sounds tongue-in-cheek, but literally, cutting-edge hymns. I mean, these were some crazy hymns. But seriously, though, he was pushing the edge theologically. He was really showing something new about God in that time period. Every time there is a move of God, there is music that accompanies it. So looking at that, looking at the imagination, it's a creativity that's released with the move of God. There's a creativity, there's a musical sound that comes with it, and we see the seers in the Old Testament. Now, I didn't get into this real specifically, but in my study, as I started to search out seeing and discerning of spirits, I found that in the Old Testament, there are 9 seers. I'm not going to list them out for you right now, but there's 9 of them total of named people who are seers. Now, of the 9, you can break them into different categories, and 3 of the 9 are worship leaders. 1/3 of all the Old Testament seers are worship leaders. You even see some of their names throughout the book of Psalms. Depending on what translation you have, some of these Psalms were written by either the name Ethan or Jeduthun, which is Jed-Ethan. And so there's Jeduthun who wrote I don't have it in my notes, but he wrote some of the Psalms. You'll notice that it says, from the worship leader, Asaph is one of them. I'm stumbling now. Ethan or Jeduthun, depending on your translation, as well as you have Asaph. Some of you are very prophetic. jumping ahead, Asaph is more well known. You probably see him more often because he was the author of Psalm 50, as well as he wrote 73 through 83. Now, the third one is Heman, H-E-M-A-N. Heman wrote Psalm 88, which all scholars agree is the most depressing chapter of the entire Bible. Seriously, there is not a hint of hope in the whole chapter. He even talks about, like, killing himself at one point, literally. It is a very unpleasant psalm. If you find this psalm encouraging at some point in your life, God bless you. You know you are going through a dark season. You might be going through a dark season if Psalm 88 is encouraging to you. Well, so these three worship leaders, though, are each named as seers. Each of those three. Now, the thing that's interesting is, if you know anything about David's tent of worship, in David's tent of worship, he set up round-the-clock worship, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for 40 years. Always going. You see in some of the Psalms, he talks about, my heart longs to go to the tent of worship. He could get up and grab a candle at 2 in the morning and walk to the tent of worship, and they are going to be rocking out like it's 2 in the afternoon. They were just keeping it going. Now, the thing about that that made it more than just praise choruses that never end and never end and never end is that these three men, these three seers, were in charge of the worship in his tent of worship. David's tent of worship, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day for 40 years, is run by three of the nine Old Testament seers. Those guys kept it going. I think about it this way, as my OCD analytical type brain goes, break up a day, 24 hours, you got three guys, they each take an 8-hour shift, it works perfect. So you take these three guys, and they are running worship nonstop. And they're writing psalms. They're industrious. It talks about how many kids they have and all the instruments that they and their children would play. And it's just these amazing three guys. Now, in 2 Chronicles 5, we have the dedication of King Solomon's temple. Now, at the dedication of the temple, the three guys are there, and they are actually the ones who are leading the worship at that place. Now, okay, so in 2 Chronicles chapter 5, looking at verse 12, all the Levites who were musicians, Asaph, Heman, Jeduthun, and their sons and relatives, stood on the east side of the altar, dressed in fine linen and playing cymbals, harps, and lyres. They were accompanied by 120 priests sounding trumpets. The trumpeters and musicians joined in unison to give thanks and praise to the Lord. Praise and thanks. Interesting. There you go. Dots are connecting. Accompanied by trumpets, cymbals, and other instruments, the singers raised their voices and praised the Lord and sang, "He is good, his love endures forever." And the temple of the Lord was filled with the cloud, and the priests could not perform their service because of the cloud, for the glory of the Lord filled the temple of God. Now, we know some about this passage because we've been hearing about this for years. The Shekinah glory of the presence of the Lord came in, wiped the priests to the ground. They couldn't do their job. They couldn't function. It was a great Sunday, you know? It's a good day at church. Well, this whole concept, though, what we have not understood is that we don't just need 24-hour, 7-day-a-week worship to happen again. We also need seers involved in worship again. That makes worship interactive. That brings that realm in touch with this realm. That brings a crossover.
These guys are so prophetic that they grab a hold of the day of Pentecost and pull it into the Old Testament. You see what's going on here? 120 of them in one accord blowing trumpets. What does that sound like? Acts chapter 2. And then the sound of the trumpets, and everybody gets wiped to the ground as the glory of God comes down and rests on them. Sounds pretty familiar, doesn't it? These guys knew how to grab a hold of something in the Spirit and pull it in. You follow me? Worship is meant to be interactive. There's something of grabbing and pulling in. You know, it never says in the New Testament that the Lord wants to restore the tabernacle of Moses. It doesn't say that he wants to restore Solomon's temple. But he does say he wants to restore David's. He says in Acts 15, 15 through 18, the words of the prophets are in agreement with this. As it is written, after this I will return and rebuild David's fallen tent. Its ruins I will rebuild and I will restore it, that the remnant of men may seek the Lord, and all the Gentiles who bear my name, says the Lord, who does these things, that they have been known for ages. Of the three Old Testament models, it's David's that really gripped the heart of God, that he wanted to, I'm going to rebuild this. Now, I'm not saying he's going to rebuild one place somewhere that worships all the time, but there's some elements of this, constant worship, constant praise, that should be going up, that should be a part of our lives. And there's something as well of the interactive worship that these seers would operate in over that 40-year period that really pleased the Lord. Now, I'm going to jump back to the Word in a minute here, but I want to tell you a story to give you an example of what this can look like. In Brazil, in 2002, I was on a missions trip, and I was with another speaker who was the main speaker. I was just part of the prayer team. And so I'm on this trip, and there was actually a few speakers. One was named Gary Oates. Gary Oates is a pastor who has had his eyes open to see things in the Spirit. He wrote a book called Open My Eyes, Lord, and we were on the same trip together. Now, he had had his eyes open to see in the Spirit about 6 months earlier. So he gets up behind the pulpit with a handheld microphone. We're in a massive church. This church seats 10,000 people. Now, this church is not just the 10,000 people seats. It actually, the membership is 36,000. But they built 10,000 and they rotate through with multiple services a week. The 36,000 are actually a part of the home groups that are all over the city that they have. In fact, this morning that I'm telling you this story about was actually just the home group leaders, 5,000 of them. So this place is half filled just with home group leaders. And so Gary Oates gets up to share with the home group leaders his testimony of how his eyes were opened, and he doesn't hardly get any words out. He's got the microphone, and he's looking down the center aisle, and he says, big, 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 big. And when he says the word angel, he's pointing, and he falls straight back. And he hits the ground, the microphone rolls out of his hand, and he is just out. He's gone. We don't know where, but he's gone. 5,000 home group leaders sitting there. Randy Clark is sitting there. He's the team leader, and the prayer ministry team is sitting there. And Randy turns to Gary's wife, Kathy, and he says, Kathy, I think the Lord's given you a prophetic word. Get up there and give it. So as she runs from there to come up and grab the microphone, as she's coming, we start to hear this noise, and it's like a and within seconds, literally seconds, there is there's a large wooden archway door as a decoration behind the pulpit on the stage that blows open toward the crowd. And this wind is blowing through it, And there's nothing behind it but a wall. There's no window. It doesn't go anywhere. It's just a decoration. And this thing blows open and wind is blowing in. And the ferns all over the front platform are blowing all over the place. It is ridiculous. Now, it is not just a wind that you can see on the stage. It got so loud that by the time Kathy got up here and grabbed the microphone and began to prophesy, I don't have a word that she said because you couldn't hear it. It was so loud that someone right next to you, you are yelling in their ear for them to hear you. Right next to each other. In a church that can seat 10,000. We're talking a massive building, and yet the wind is around everybody so much. A lot of people felt it actually like swirling around them, and it was just, you couldn't hear anything. Now, being a little bit scientific, I decided to test this out. What's going on in this room? Let's see what's happening. So I'm running around, and there's these big windows that hadn't been filled in yet. So it was just an opening outside. So I go over to one of these, and I literally hop up, and I step out, eerie calm, nothing, no air movement, not a sound outside this church. Step back in, roaring wind. You can't hear, you can't think, it's overwhelming. Like, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable. Then, as I'm walking from the back of the church to the front down the main aisle, I get to about where the emblem is here on the carpet, and there was no steps, so it was just a platform of about 3-4 feet, and I'm standing about that far from the pulpit, and I start feeling like I'm literally walking into a cloud. When I say that, I mean in the sense that there was a mist hanging in the air that literally you could walk into it and get your shirt soaked, or you could step a couple feet back and be completely dry. Shirt soaked, completely dry. Like, okay, there is something right here. And I do not mind getting wet in this. It was unbelievable. I mean, we've seen a lot of tremendous things. We've seen tremendous healings. We've seen tremendous things happen. This is one of those, like, I have no grit for this. Like, I am in Acts 2 right now. You know, what does this mean, and what should we do? Like, that's your Acts 2 questions right there. What does this mean, and what should I do? That morning, I mean, she gets up, she grabs the mic, she begins to prophesy. Randy turns to the prayer team, and he says, go. Just pray for anybody that you can get within hand's reach. And so we're moving around, and we're praying for people, and tremendous, tremendous healings. There are two that stick in my mind. And when someone says, tell me a testimony of healing, always these two are the ones that stick in my mind. The first was a lady who had one leg that was literally 3 inches different than the other because she had bone removed, not because she had a bad back or a spine problem. Bone removed from one of her legs because of a car accident. So she's wearing a shoe with a lift. And she says, you know, will the Lord even out my legs? And I say, do you want to be taller or shorter? That is an atmosphere of faith. I don't normally ask that question. But that was a good day. So she's like, oh, shorter, shorter, of course. Like, okay. So, no, taller. I'm confused. She was really wanted to be taller. Or shorter. I am so blanking right now. She wanted to be shorter. You're right. Okay, so she's got her short leg in the middle. She's got her long leg out. And she at this point, she's taken off her shoes, right? So she's got bare feet. We're in this room where you can't hear anything. It's just noise all around you. And I said, okay, here's what I want you to do. Yes, Lord? Your servant is listening. Yeah. It better be the Lord. That's right. Okay, so you got this thing right here. You got one leg sticking out, one leg short in the middle. She wants to be shorter. And I say, okay, walk in a circle. So she takes one leg. She begins to hobble in a circle. And as she's doing this, and I can't hear things because of the wind, I hear a sharp sound of crunch, 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 one time around of crunching sounds, and she's on even feet. I have no idea what happened as she walked around in one circle and that crunching sound and what the Lord did, but amazing. The second testimony that I remember from that morning was a lady who had a tumor on her shoulder about the size of a lemon. And this was under her shirt, and you could see, like, you know, and she's pointing to it, and translators telling me it's a tumor. It's a cancer, tumor. Okay. And I reach out to lay my hand on top to pray for her. And, you know, you got a gap here between where her shoulder starts and the top of the tumor that's about 2.5, maybe 3 inches. I reach out to put my hand on top of it, and I end up dropping to her shoulder. Because the moment that I get close enough to touch it, it's gone. It was just done. I was like, oh, okay. I don't know what just happened, but that's good, right? There were just unbelievable reports that came back from that morning. Just healing after healing after healing. Just stuff that is blow your mind amazing. Well, one of the things I learned in that environment was how much of a difference that breakthrough kind of worship really makes. That church has such a revelation of worship. And they had set an atmosphere. They'd opened up the Spirit. They acknowledge the Spirit. They interact with the Spirit. And it opens up a realm where things like this can happen, where they have stuff like that that breaks through. This is one of these, you're standing in the Acts chapter 2 experience. You're standing in the 2 Chronicles 5 experience. And it's that moment where worship becomes interactive. And there's an opening that comes right back and forth between the kingdom that it's on earth as it is in heaven in that moment. And the sickness is gone, and this is gone, and that's gone, and the thing changes as that crossover happens. Now, this, I believe, is something that is not just meant for an occasional situation, but it's something the Lord actually intends to be, if I can use the word carefully, normal. Yeah. Well, John chapter 4, I want to look at this together. I said I would tell you a story and come back to the word. In John chapter 4, we see Jesus sitting at the well, talking with the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman. And usually we focus on the first part of the story, but we kind of forget that the context of what they're talking about. This is a conversation about worship. They are having a conversation about worship in this chapter. John chapter 4, starting in verse 19. Sir, the woman said, I can see that you are a prophet. Our ancestors, being the Samaritans, worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem. You see, she's leading him into a discussion about the proper location of worship. See the context? Samaritans, we worship on the mountain. Jews, you worship in Jerusalem. What do you think, Jesus? She's being a little feisty here. Woman, Jesus replied. I always wondered how he said that. Woman, believe me. Believe me, woman. A time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshipers will worship the Father in the Spirit and in truth. For they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshipers must worship in the spirit and in truth. The woman said, I know that Messiah, called Christ, is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us. Then Jesus declared, I, the one speaking to you, am he. Awesome conversation. Now, she's asking him, what's the right location for worship, right? And he's saying, look, the time is coming and has now come when the Father, you're neither going to worship him on the mountain nor in Jerusalem, but those who seek him will worship in the spirit and in truth. I covered this real briefly the other night. Truth is the word aletheia. It means reality or realm. The word spirit is the word pneuma. The word pneuma can be interpreted as human spirit, Holy Spirit. It can be the spirit realm. It all depends on the context. Pneuma is like a generic word, like breath or wind. And so you have to look at the context to go, okay, the fruit of the Spirit. Is the fruit of the Spirit the fruit of the Holy Spirit, or is it the fruit of the human spirit? You have to discern the context, because pneuma is a generic word. The context here is the pneuma aletheia. The second word, truth, is the context. So it's not you worship him in the Holy Spirit and in truth. It's not you worship him in your human spirit and in truth. It's that you worship the Father in the pneuma aletheia. Now, aletheia, realm or reality. You worship God in the spirit realm. In the pneuma aletheia, in the spirit realm. That's where we worship God. That's why it says in verse 24, God is spirit, and his worshipers must worship in the spirit realm. You follow that? I've heard a lot of confusing interpretations of this verse. You know, truth is doctrine. Truth is correct theology. You know, you get the spirit and you get the theology and then you worship God correctly. It doesn't really make sense. It's saying God is a spirit. The discussion is the location of worship. Where do we worship? Jesus? On a mountain or in Jerusalem? Spirit realm. God is a spirit. They're talking about the location of worship. You know, John, who wrote this, also wrote the book of Revelation. Fascinatingly, he gets this. And so in the book of Revelation, chapter 1, verse 10, he says, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day. He knew what he's talking about. He knew how to go in, and he knew how to come out. I'm going to go in, I'm going to worship in spirit, and in the spirit realm. That's what I'm going to do. He knows how to do it. He goes in and he comes out. So, I would like us to do that tonight. Oh boy. I will need my whiteboard up here. If we can bring that up, thank you very much. I have an activation. I have done this in a lot of places, and it always is surprising and amazing what the Lord does. Now, yeah, aim it right toward them. Let them see this this creation here we have. As I said, my wife is more of an artist than I am. So I was struggling to draw circles that didn't look like eggs. Now, this here is a blueprint, essentially, of the room that you're sitting in. We have a little sound booth back here. It even has stools. I don't know if you have stools, but we have a sound booth. We have the drum kit in the worship section. You have the stage. We have the emblem here. You have the pews, and not pews, but, you know, the lovely chairs. We don't really have a good name for those. We just call them chairs. We need something more liturgical, I think. Well, we have this, and what we do is we're going to take a few minutes. Remember, I talked to you a lot earlier, if you remember, about the imagination, right? Now we're going to validate what the Lord shows us. We're going to take a few minutes where we're going to bow our heads, not just yet. You guys are all still ready. where we bow our heads, we close our eyes, we ask the Lord to show you something in your imagination that's in this room. Not a prophecy for another person, not a vision of what's going on outside this room. You know, we're narrowing it to what is in this room, what beings, what objects, what you might see, water, fire, whatever, just what you might see in this room that you are discerning with your gift of discerning of spirits. This is in Hebrews 5:14. It says to have your senses, referring to your spiritual senses, exercised to discern both good and evil. This is an exercise. And in this exercise, once we've taken a few minutes, I will then call on people. And as I call on you, we'll mark it down on our board. Now, the backup thing is, I've already written down what I see in this room. And this stays in my pocket till we're done. We're going to get your input. We're going to put it on the board. And then I will show you what I have on my piece of paper, which will show you how amazingly accurate you already are. Which most people who don't have a seer hanging around their church don't get a lot of confirmation of what they're seeing. So you may be praising the Lord on any given Sunday, and you think you're seeing something, and you're going, just my imagination, right? You're brushing it off. It's just my imagination. Or we don't even know what to do with it in worship. So, okay, I see this, but what do I do with it? Then we're going to take what we have, and we're going to activate it together. I've seen incredible kind of stuff happen when you activate it. I don't want to give away any more of some of those details because I want it to be just completely fresh for you guys. So now would be a great time to turn your cell phones off 2 hours ago. Funny because I have a friend who does a lot of preaching and you know he's always like, all right, turn your cell phones off. I'm going to start speaking. And then it was the one time it went off in his pocket. It's like, oh boy, that was humbling. Well, you ready? Yeah. All right. Close your eyes, bow your heads. Lord, we ask you to speak to them right now, to show them something in their heart that is in this room. Use the imagination to show them what is going on in this room. All right, I think we're ready to start.
Karen, can I have you write on the board for me again here? And just raise your hand and I'll call on you and just share what you were sensing, seeing, feeling in the room. On the end, yes. Keep it as short as possible as well. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Excellent. How many else saw something in that same area? Okay, what did you see there? A high cliff waterfall. Awesome. What else? Here? A chandelier, like hanging over it? Oh. Okay, very interesting. And behind you? Right here? Okay, okay. The pool of grace, that makes sense. And then here? Okay, okay. Now we're going to get to that specifically. I'm still asking about this emblem area right here. So hold on. Yes, right there. I'm sorry. I'm going to need you to say that again because I'm having a hard time hearing you. A stream. Uh-huh. Mm. Where was the stream? Where was the stream coming from? Okay, so it's coming down like the waterfall, and it's silver and gold, and then it turns to different colors. Wow. Wow. Excellent. And then back here with the hand up, yeah, wave at Dave, and he'll help you out here.
Above us is a hallway, a long hallway, and there's doors on that side, and there's doors on this side with another level above, and there's a large door at the end, very large door with its gate. These doors are waiting to be opened for the blessings to flow down once they realize what authority that they have in speaking it into existence.
That's really interesting because it connects to something I actually have in my book where I talk about a hallway of faith and how
yes.
the Lord opens those things.
And there's two levels.
Yeah. Very
on this
interesting.
Side, on the right. Here.
Now, I want to stay with the emblem for right yes. now. So if there's anyone else, raise your hand real quick. One or two more. Okay, behind you, Dave.
Yes, I see angels holding these big bowls of liquid, and I said, Lord, what is that? And it's like healing and joy and whatever one needs, it's just there ready for the people to receive.
Excellent, excellent.
Man, I see on the side, it's like poles, but on there's a center side, and over that rail is nothing but water pouring out and flowing out. It's like these pillars here.
Yeah.
And then over the pillars, there's a long thing like a row, but over this row, it's nothing but water pouring out and flowing in. It's like a big gush of water.
Excellent. Excellent. Very good, you guys. Now, hold right there. It's all the same. Connection. Yeah. Okay. So another area of the room. Raise your hand. Feel free to talk about another area. Yeah.
On the platform, I saw two angels, one on each end, one standing on that side and one standing on that side. And actually, I don't recall seeing on that side what that angel had, but this angel on this side had like a harp, like a musical instrument.
Okay. Okay. How many else would confirm they were seeing those same two? Raise your hand. Let's see. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. That's pretty good confirmation. See, the problem a lot of us have is that we see stuff regularly. We never get any confirmation. And so we sit and we brush things off year after year. Or there's one person who's going to get up and they're going to share what they're seeing every week. And sister, super prophetic, we all get kind of frustrated because, all right, there's 50 angels on the platform. What do we do with that? How do we enter in? How do we do something with that? We'll get there. All right. More hands, but not just about the two on the platform. Let's get something else. Yeah, whoever, you guys find someone with their hand up next, and we'll just keep going.
Well, I've seen angels in position behind everybody.
You're seeing the angels that are with each person. Yeah. Okay, good, good.
It probably mean anything, but I saw butterflies. I know it's kind of cliche, butterflies, a lot of them. And every time I ask, like, what is it? I saw one on top of my pastor's head, but every time I ask what it is, I just saw butterflies. That's the only thing I could see.
Where are you?
It was like coming out. They were like coming out of. It was something, but I see the pattern, and it was just coming out of something.
Are you seeing them in the room though?
It was close up, maybe.
Okay. So you can't say like where you saw them in the room, but this is just something you keep seeing.
That was probably the only location.
You saw it where?
One on her head.
On her head?
But I only saw it close up. It was never. I asked about what was in the room, but I didn't see that.
Okay.
I only just saw it.
Okay. This is where I want to clarify. That is a good prophetic word. Because you could take that and you can totally launch into that, especially if you see the individual that's connected to that. Because you can get a really good word as the Lord shows you the interpretation. So if you know the person that it's connected to, you know, butterfly is a very, I mean, that's a real metaphor. The Lord's talking about coming out of cocoons, yeah. Coming out of, you know, old growth into new growth and freedom and, you know, just moving like the wind. It talks about in John 3 being a blow like the Spirit, that we move like the Spirit. It's like the wind. We don't know where it comes from and where it goes. That's kind of the pattern of how a butterfly goes. Awesome personal prophetic word. We gotta look to the difference, though, is that we're looking for discerning. So if you press into it some more, I think that there's going to be something the Lord's going to show you about what's going on in the room as well. Because clearly you're prophetic. You're getting good words. So let's press in a little more. Who's next? Who's next?
Hi.
Person with a microphone. Yes.
I was sitting here and when I had my, you know, I looked at my sister. I was like, my sister Carol in the spirit. And I looked at her and she just, her hair was gold. Everything about her was just like a blanket of gold had fallen on her.
Do you see it on just one individual?
I just think at the time, because you know how you say, I knew it wasn't my imagination. I know I see in the spirit. I was like, wow, God.
Yeah.
And I kind of just stayed there with her.
Okay. Another good prophetic word. Now let's stick with aiming for what's in the room atmosphere. This is really hard for really prophetic people because we're so used to just this person, boom, here's an awesome word. Good job. That's great to see. Now we're going to try and stretch, though, what's in the room right now. All right, who's next?
As I entered into the realm of the spirit, I seen angels, and they were just going around, and they were running, and angels had scarves, and they were like yellow, purple, and red, and they were just waving, and they were waving. And then all of a sudden, I seen a big, like, something, a big cloth covering go over the room, and the angels were holding the cloth up above us. I don't know what color the cloth was, but I just seen them just hold the cloth up over us.
All right, we're going to jump off of that. That's good. What else are you seeing hang in the air over the group? That's what I want to hear next. So go to those people, guys.
I saw from the pulpit all the way back to the door a cloud, like a glory cloud.
A cloud. What color are you seeing? Any idea?
It was a white cloud with gold in it.
Okay. Awesome.
I saw on the platform, I saw a cherubim, and I saw the face of an ox, And then I saw the face of a lion. And I heard the Lord saying that you don't want us to prophesy, but that's what I saw. I saw the face of the ox, and then I saw the face of the lion. Mm.
Okay, excellent.
What I saw in the spirit was a huge, beautiful harp, and the harp was in the middle section of the sanctuary.
Oh, excellent.
This is a little weird, but I saw an apple, but then the apple began to grow very big and shiny. And I say, God, why is this apple continually growing? And he says, my focus is toward you. My focus is toward this house. He says, I'm focusing my eyes upon this house.
Like an apple of the eye? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
In the back there, I saw two angels with a fire lantern in the back of the room standing tall, and they're about 15 feet tall in the back. And then right here.
When you say in the back, you mean like near the door?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, one on each side.
But they're the way they're dressed in like warrior apparel. Mm-hmm. And you don't see wings, but they're extremely tall.
Okay.
Gargantuan. Okay. And then I saw a lion, just as she said. It was on this side, and I was assuming maybe because I saw it, but it was by the musician stand. And as the lion would open up his mouth, he like roared a couple times, but on the third time of the roar, there was like a warrior that tumbled out of his mouth and stood up. He was dressed like in ancient Japanese war clothing, and he had a maroon and gold banner, and he had it, and it was going this way.
Wow. There's a lot there to interpret, definitely.
Amen. Can I speak?
I don't know where you are.
Here I am, right here.
All right.
Amen. I saw four angels. I saw two in the corner, which they was tall. I didn't see the clothing or the garment, but I knew they was angels. I saw two in the front. I also touch and agree with the woman up front when she saw the white, like a white veil, maybe a cloth for Shekinah glory. I saw angels. It's like every one of us had angels going up and down the aisle. I also saw the baby right here. I saw a halo over the baby right here.
Mm.
The woman of God, pastor's wife, she had her own angel of light standing by her in front of her.
That was it.
Amen.
All right. Now keep in mind, you guys, because there is, there's always going to be someone who's seeing something different. You know, we have probably six different descriptions of what's in this center area right here. It's just like prophecy, where it says we know in part and we prophesy in part. It's not this one's right, this one's wrong. It's you guys are adding your pieces together because your discernment is picking up different pieces of this. I mean, you're picking up stuff that I wasn't seeing, but now once you've declared it, then I can begin to enter in and use my faith to enter into what you're seeing. That's, you know, if I might not see something about Karen, but you prophesy it over her, and then I go, yep, that's so right. That is just so right. I get to join in once you've shared it. So you get to join in once you hear someone else share it. So even if you're not even getting anything, you can get something. Because you can join in to what someone else is seeing. And you can all do this, even if you're not a seer, even if not the gift of discerning of spirits. You can do it because Hebrews 5:14 says, you have your senses exercised to discern. That's all of us that have that available. So we're going to take just a few more here. I'd like to hear if anyone else has something that they're picking up on hanging in the air or in the aisles. We haven't heard anything about in the aisles yet. So
hanging in the air.
Okay, in the back there, yes.
Yes, gold lights coming from the top, just going in every direction, gold, you know, and they're thin, but they're long, and they're just moving all around, gold.
And it's hanging in the air, you're saying?
Yeah, hanging.
Okay.
and just coming down from the top.
Gotcha, gotcha. Who's next? Right here, yes.
In the middle of the sanctuary from the ceiling, I just saw a giant axe.
Any thoughts?
Sharpening discernment.
I like those thoughts. That works. Yes.
I saw...
Now, come on, Ebony. Lay it on us.
I saw from the back door. I saw from the back door, like, in each aisle, all three of these aisles, there were angels coming down, and they all had, like, these big torches, and they came into, like, the front, like, from this end all the way down to the end of, like, the, you know, drummers and stuff over there. They came, and I saw the word ignite, and they began to, like, the fire went from this end all the way over there, and then at first it was red, and then it turned yellow and orange, and then it was like white, and I heard the Lord saying like purifying fire, and then it turned into liquid, and it seeped from up here all the way back. So it was liquid fire.
I would just like to pause for a moment. I have written down here, come here. Come here, you're going to prove it. Come here. What does that say right there? Isles of fire. That's what I have written down. That is a lot more detailed. Do we have room for a traveling intern? No. Oh, boy. Well, okay. These are good. I think I'm going to pause right there. I'm going to tell you what else I have here. I had a stage pool of water. Now, I didn't know what to call this before, so we have stage pool of water, aisles of fire, angels near doors, as well as at the video cameras. There was something by each of the video cameras as well, some sort of an angelic guard station there. The back area, I felt like there was a separation between the front pews and the last four or so back pews, chairs, that there was like a rest area. Like that was an area that the Lord has put some sort of a rest atmosphere there. And then last, electric cloud in the air. There is something of a cloud hanging in the air that's got like an electric nature to it, where it was different people saying they're seeing gold light shooting around it, or like lightning, or different ways they were describing that. So yeah, A+, everybody. Fantastic. Thank you, Karen. Okay, now it's time for activation. That was just warm up and stretch out kind of time. All right, now I don't know who's able to help me with the music. I'd like to play some sort of music. It could be the worship team. It could be a CD. I'm not looking for warfare, but I'm not looking for soaking. I'm looking for somewhere in between. Anybody, can I get a worship team? $100, $100, $10, $5. Worship team or a CD, whatever will be fine, but I'm going to need that in a few minutes, all right? So if you guys can run around, scramble, that would be great. Now, what I'd like to do, here's how we take this and we turn it into something that we can activate, that we can interact with, all right? Now, I personally picture David's tent of worship operating with the seers more in a spontaneous manner. But since this is so foreign to the modern church, this is why I teach us through it first. I get you warmed up to it. I show you how you can do it. But I believe that in that setting, they would have just said, you know, the Lord has just brought in a pool, a fountain of grace. It's time to enter in. Let's go. And they would have just spontaneously took us into it. Now we'd be like, does he actually mean I leave my seat? Like, what does he mean? I don't know what that means. Like, you know, we'd have no idea what to do if we were thrown into that environment. So I kind of walk us into it. Now what we're going to do is as we begin, they're gonna get the worship together and they're gonna get some of that going. But what you have laid out here is literally you have a map to what's going on in this room in the spirit realm. Do you understand? That's what you have here. You guys have worked together as a team. Some of your words have even been confirmed by up to 14 people to show you what's going on in this room. You have a fountain here that someone saw the Lord standing in, and it's a fountain of grace, and there are angels there that have brought different colors, and there's different things going on right there, and you can enter into that. You have an area in the back. This is very common to see the angelic around the main doors of rooms. That's very common, standing guard. It's very common. That back area is a rest area. I love when I see the rest areas. That is so interesting. We had it in one place where the church was maybe 100 to 120 chairs, you know, a small little room. We're in a basement, cinder block walls, the music bounces off of everything. And people go, oh, there's a rest area. They saw it. There's a rest area in the back where there's a couple couches. And then up in the front corner, they saw a worship area that was all like purple, and they were going to jump into worship. So you have like 10 people up here jumping around, yelling, dancing, screaming in worship. And then you have just maybe 150 feet away, you have another 8 to 10 people that are in the rest area, and they are snoring. I mean, they're out like in a minute or so, and you have 8 to 10 of them snoring while these guys are worshiping like crazy people, just that far from each other. The environments of what's in the spirit, once you begin to acknowledge it, is so fascinating how it impacts this world. I put it this way. The physical act of obedience done in faith releases spiritual realities. The physical act of obedience done in faith releases spiritual realities. For example, if I shake your hand, an impartation does not take place. But if I intentionally, as a physical act of obedience, done in faith, lay my hand on you, a spiritual reality of impartation takes place, or healing, or deliverance. It's a physical act done in faith that releases a spiritual reality. We see this in a lot of different ways. When you got saved, you probably prayed a prayer with someone. You know, you could train a parrot to say that same prayer, and that parrot did not accept salvation. You could even mouth the words yourself, but the physical act of moving your tongue without faith doesn't release it in your life. The physical act of moving your tongue with faith releases spiritual reality of a new birth within you. We have this in all different arenas of our life, even giving. You can put money in the bucket every week and it makes no difference, but the physical act of obedience done in faith releases the spiritual reality of the blessing and the favor with it. So what we're going to do now is not just, and this is the problem, is there are so many people that are seeing things and they don't know what to do with it. If you see something, the question is always, what do I do? What is next? If you see you're in worship at any Sunday, any church, and you see something, the question you need to ask the Holy Spirit is, what are you showing me? What does it mean? What must I do? What must I do? In that moment, if you do what the Lord tells you to do, it releases it into the atmosphere. That we've seen this happen, whether it's the rest area or the water area or people get healed. One of the places I was in was in New Jersey. We're in a church that's like 150 years old at least, and it's old brick stone type building. It's surrounded by residential. Anytime they play music after 9 o'clock, the cops show up almost immediately. The neighbors will call, they'll complain about noise ordinances. So this church can never do worship after a service on a Sunday night. And so 9 o'clock comes and it goes, and it's about 11 o'clock, and we're going to do this activation. And they're like, we can't do worship. And I was like, just do worship. It'll be all right. They start doing the worship, and cops are literally driving down back and forth, and they're not coming in. And the pastor's like, I don't understand. Normally, they turn their lights on, they pull over, they come and tell us. And I was like, well, let's see what happened. We looked at the board again, and there was an angel that people had pointed out at every window of the church. These windows were open. So I go outside with the pastor and stand right outside the church, and we hear no sound of the worship. It was completely muffled to no sound by standing outside this church. My friend Adam, who was running this meeting, was like, you don't understand. Now we can do worship at our conferences every time. I was like, I don't know that it's every time, but that's fantastic. But the Lord had muffled it through those beings he had put there. This stuff, once you acknowledge it, do something that the Lord tells you to step into it by faith, it releases it into your life. That's why this stuff works. We actually have to step out and do something. Remember, Jesus makes mud and puts it on a blind man's eyes and tells him, go wash and you'll be healed. You have to do something to release it in your life. He tells lame people to get up and walk. And you got to really have some faith to go, all right, I'll try it. So we're going to do something. So am I ready with my worshipy people? Yes? All right. Good. Teamwork. Awesome. Well, I'm going to let you guys get us rolling. But what you guys are going to do is whatever you saw in the room or whatever you're connecting with, like, oh, man, that rest area, I can't wait to get back there. Or I got to get up in this pool. Or I got to get in the aisle of fire. Or I got to get wherever it is that you're seeing. As the worship starts, you're going to get up and you're going to spread out to wherever the Lord directs you to go. And your leader is already going. Seriously, let's stand up. Let's go wherever the Lord tells you to go. And in this, you are free from this point forward to move from place to place, to rotate, to lay back there and snore, to come up here and get healed, or whatever you need the Lord to do in your life right now. You can move around to these different places as we keep the worship going. And is there anything administrative we need to cover before we... Some people will probably have to go soon, so any administrative type things to announce? We have service.